Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And Southside Broadcasting. .podbean.com.
Well, here we go. Harry and Meghan hit back at loss of royal roles, according to The Times, The Daily Mail. Have they no respect, palace bombshell, as Harry and Meghan stripped of royal patronages, but even as Philip's in hospital, they blast back with churlish insults. The Daily Star, of course, classic red top, publicity shy couple to no longer do whatever it was they did before. Daily Mirror, the Queen, no way back, Harry and Meg bombshell. And as we progress to the Daily Express, of course, resolute but sad, Queen strips Harry of titles, with the Daily Telegraph, the Duke's sadness giving up military roles, and thankfully the I simply lead with where next for the monarchy. You might be assume that something has actually been happening there, which ties in with the royal family and obviously Prince Philip and his state of play, etc. But, you know, is that going to actually stop Robin Pierce going right ahead and actually dealing with Cotney, and of course the space sweeper scenario? I don't think so, nor indeed a classic movie that is surely an absolute gem with the modern day Western. Oh, I don't know. Rebecca, what do you think? Should we actually ask Richard Fitzwilliams, who's bursting to actually share thoughts of the current state of play with the House of Windsor, or should we go straight into movie reviews? What do you think?
Oh, please don't make me choose. I'd rather not choose at all, because I'd love to hear both. So it's your call, Alex. It's your show.
I don't know. Well, look, I tell you what. Let's ignore those people who are going on Oprah for the moment, because obviously Oprah has got their own publicity show people, and I think they've got two starlets that will be working through there. And assuming they're not going to come back and take over the country. Richard, how have you been coping with, obviously, Prince Philip's, well, shall we say, frail state? I mean, you know, clearly we all have to pass on in some way, shape or form. And we were always having you on standby just in case the button had been pressed recently, as indeed is Siren Radio, if the thing should happen.
Well, I mean, I would say that what's been emphasised, the fact that at 99 he is in hospital is, of course, a cause for concern. I think that is a fair comment. But he didn't go in by ambulance. He went in by car. He was able to walk in. As far as we know, we do know it's not COVID-related. And, of course, the other thing is it's purely precautionary. He had been feeling unwell for a while. He's in for observation and rest. and abundantly cautious is the word. That's as far as I know. I mean, he'll be in for a few days. The idea is just to observe. Let's just hope, with June the 10th so close, and that would be absolutely historic, hopefully things will go well and he will be able to return to Windsor, where he and the Queen are in the household of over 20 looking after them, and they're they're called HMS Bubble, which is rather charming. And of course they both had their jabs, and talk about being an impatient patient. We know he can't stand issues that deal with his health, and I would be doing no one any favours to reel off a whole list of the problems he's had over the last decade or so. I mean, the most serious was in 2011, which was required coronary stenting. That was at Papworth Hospital. At the moment, he's in the King Edward VII, and hopefully will soon be out.
Okay, Richard, let's hold it there. Obviously, we send him our very best wishes, as we send our best wishes to every individual, every human being on the planet who's working through that. Just because you happen to have actually had an accident of birth, or indeed marriage, doesn't necessarily say that you warrant more detailed sort of scenario. So praise and positive prayers to everybody. We will return to Harry and that other person who indeed Katie Grimerson just can't stand, and indeed has actually commented on your Facebook updates, Richard, by saying good riddance to them. We'll come back to that. But Robin, let's go into your movie review to start off with, which is something which I'd probably give it a 6.5 too, because I thought the number of times Cotney was mentioned, or indeed if you had a drinking game when everybody said Cotney, you'd think, oh, just call it Dorothy. Let's do something completely different. We're talking, of course, about the joys of Space Sweepers. Rebecca, did you manage to see Space Sweepers?
I've seen both the films we're going to discuss today. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, one I would give 8.5 to 9 to, and the other one 6.5. Anyway, Robin, over to yourself.
Space Sweepers. It's a 2021 South Korean production. I do believe it's only the second South Korean sci-fi film I've ever seen, the first being The Host several years ago. And I was drawn to this primarily because it is science fiction, one of my like specialist areas. And it was really, you know, curiosity as well. I'd taken Richard's advice and hadn't even watched the trailer. I just thought Space Sweepers, something about
Richard's,
you know,
campaign is working. Abolish all trailers.
And as it started, what I found was it actually looks completely stunning. The visuals on it, the set design, everything is absolutely 10 out of 10. No question. Cannot flaw the visuals there, okay? But the plot. Now, it seems to have a lot of plots. And in trying to describe the plot in a non-spoilery way, I found myself drafting paragraph after paragraph after paragraph. And in the end, I decided to just go with the Internet Movie Database, what they said, and then dissect what that is. So it's set in the year 2092 and follows the crew of a space junk collector ship called the Victory. When the crew discover a humanoid robot named Dorothy that's known to be a weapon of mass destruction, they get involved
it's
in a...
just baby Archie's twin sister, basically, that's all. Or is it a sister from her? That's the key thing.
Now, that's all well and good, but this is where it gets messy. And the film's really ambitious. I mean, there are 8 different spoken languages in this film, and they are 8 Earth languages, not your made-up Klingon, Romulan, or what have you. These are proper languages. So parts of it are subtitled, and you find that your attention has to go all over the place just to try and keep up, because it steals liberally from, let's see.
Blade Runner?
Blade Runner. Total Recall, the ending is pure. Well, it's either Star Wars Episode 4 or it's Star Wars episode 9. There's a lot of episode 9 in there,
it's
actually.
Everything put in there in a kind of Korean way. It's
everything put in there. It really is hard to follow which plot you're watching. Are they going to try and put an atmosphere on Mars? Are they trying to deal with this deadly little robot?
Are they looking after the tiny child who's farting regularly?
Exactly. The acting comes from the South Korean histrionic school of acting.
Where and Richard Armitage, of course.
Well, yeah, but there's an awful lot of shouting and gritting of teeth.
Cut knee.
Bearing of as many of your teeth to the camera as you can at any one time. Mm. So it's a convoluted... I think my best description would be it's a smorgasbord of just about every sci-fi trope put in a package that looks absolutely glorious. As I said, visually, 10 out of 10. Narrative brings it down to 8. Level of acting brings it down to a 6.
Interesting. I mean, obviously, Richard, your appetite will have been whetted to actually check out this particular Netflix classic, I can see. But let's find out what Rebecca made of this whole process. I mean, for me, it also lost points because of the liberal use of the F-bomb, which I thought, there's no need for that, really. You know, anyway, Rebecca.
Yeah, so as you know, I'm not a massive sci-fi fanatic unless someone asks me to watch a film or, you know, recommend something.
Or
so
I'm glad that I watched rewinds. It.
Exactly. So you're putting me on a lot of great films here. So for me, this is everything I thought a sci-fi kind of cliche film would be like. So I did enjoy it, but the whole way through I'm thinking, oh, we all know what's going to happen next. And as you say, I do think the plot was hard to follow at times. As you say, I don't know whether they were trying to follow the Mars situation or whether they were following the child situation. So I was quite lost at points. But with the subtitle,
just like
part,
Harry and Meghan, surely.
There you go. So with the subtitle part, I thought it was really fantastic how they included loads of different languages. I thought that was really realistic because if we did have to all go up to space, there are going to be lots of nationalities and languages. So I enjoyed that part, but it was hard to follow, agreed. I then also have the issue of, with the acting, I'm not sure if the quality of the acting was reduced by the English dub voiceover. That's what I think did it, because I think the actors themselves were brilliant. I think it's the having the non-authentic voice over the top of what would have been their actual voice that took away from, you know, the real experience of an actor. So I can't say that it was the acting. I think it was the voiceover that gave me the, you know, the issue. So that would deduct a few points for me as well.
It's like a technological sci-fi version of Monkey back in the day, but still, never mind. Richard, on that basis, from Robin and Rebecca, and obviously I've floated in a few things, such as just have a drinking game every time somebody mentions Cotney, and you'll be completely paralysed by the first 15 minutes. Richard, does this appeal? Do you think, yeah, actually, with respect to Harry and Meghan and Prince Philip and my own theatrical reviews, I think I'll give this a shot.
I'm afraid for reasons of time, if no other, which is absolutely terrifying, quite honestly. But in general, if you forget the royals, as Robin and I have discussed quite frequently, we have very, very different tastes and very, very different enthusiasms. And this wouldn't be something that would have an appeal for me.
Well, let's move on to something which effectively has got four languages in, I could actually count. You've got German, you've got Native American, you've got American English, and of course you've got English, slotting into a little homage to Rupert Murdoch's sadly lamented News of the World. Oh no, it's a different thing entirely, but it does feature Tom Hanks in what I think was, I shed tears at this, I have to admit, and I thoroughly enjoyed News of the World. I think it's, I'm putting it probably even to, it might even go to a 9 actually for me, but anyway, enough of that scenario. Richard, take us through this before we find out again what Rebecca made of this and whether Robin will be tempted to check out News of the World. In fact, he might already have done so. In fact, he already has. Go for it, Richard.
No, but I was looking forward to this. I enjoy Westerns. It does, of course, depend, and we don't get a large number of them. But it's not, firstly, you can look back in classics such as High Noon and similar. And secondly, with a cast including Tom Hanks, I wasn't aware of Helena's Angle, but I certainly am now. And I think when we get to the Oscars, I wouldn't be at all surprised if we become a great deal more aware of this absolutely remarkable German actress. I mean, there's no doubt that this had two very, very strong features, I think. One were the performances, and secondly, visually. I thought it was wonderful. And I mean, obviously you have the theme, and this is part and parcel of any Western and has been since for at least 60 years, and that is this theme of exploitation. It's set in Texas 5 years after the end of the Civil War, and you've got the pioneering settlers moving into lands peopled by Native Americans, and the dreadful cost of this in raids one way or the other, but also the fact that their lands are being they're being deprived of their lands, but also, of course, the vast herds of buffalo. And we have one of the most effective scenes in this movie is, firstly, it deals with Captain Jefferson Kyle Kidd, played by Tom Hanks. He's a former Confederate soldier, and he has a quirky job. I do have to say I'm not entirely convinced there were a very great number of people doing something similar, because if you went from town to town in the dangerous countryside, I don't think you'd last for long. But he goes from town to town and reads the news. It's a desperately parochial society. He tries to open it up just a bit and charges. So you go and listen to what is in papers at home and abroad.
Read from Arath. Read from Arath. That's what you need. Arath, not Earth. Arath.
I thought Tom Hanks did extremely well. The point is, he takes his ramshackle wagon, and it's a dangerous country, no question about it. And also, he comes across an orphan who is Joanna, played by Helena Zengel. She's 10 years old. She speaks no English. She's been brought up by the Kiowa people, who massacred or killed her her parents, who moved onto their land, and her sister. And the Captain Kidd's intention is, firstly, he wants to return Johanna to her remaining relatives, and then he also wants to go home, and we see climactically what is there for him. This is a movie that's fascinating. Firstly, you've got wonderful, as I mentioned, performances. Tom Hanks, absolutely first rate. It's a very sensitive performance. You've got a rounded figure. You can feel that this is someone who's had experience of life. And I found him deeply touching and very likable. And also, you've got the remarkable Helena Zengel as a very, very troubled girl who...
Mutti Vater Tot! Mutti Vater Tot!
It is quite extraordinary. She speaks, we think anyway, initially only Kiowa. And it's fascinating. It's a journey for her too. Visually, absolutely stunning. I mean, seeing, for example, they use helicopter shots in some of it. And I mean, scenes of the buffalo herds and cattle being moved into a village and so forth. All of this is amazing. And also the action sequences I thought were good. There is a glorious sequence. It's almost as though they were the equivalent of some form of worship of the golden calf in the Wild West, where they come across a gang of, as they're traveling from town to town, a gang of racist militia. And the captain has no option but to give up.
Arath, Arath, that's what you want. Arath News.
It's absolutely the town of Arab. And I have to say that this I thought was gloriously gaudy. I mean, I quite literally, if they'd erected some form of golden calf or the Texan equivalent of it, I think it would have been quite appropriate. No, this is an impressive film. It's dramatic. The music is good. Visually, it's stunning. And if you enjoy Westerns, and the only reason I wouldn't go quite a 10 out of 10, I did find the plot, perhaps, you know, the fact that they pass her homestead where she lived, the fact that it would have been a very, very dangerous occupation for anyone to have, and I doubt he'd have continued along with it, but a really first-class film.
And how often have we actually just wanted to actually keep hold of your children by actually tying them to the stake in the ground? Frequently, Robin has actually said, if only I could have done that with Stephen and Tiffany, all would have changed completely. Just kidding. Rebecca, what are your thoughts on News of the World?
Yeah, I thought this was a great film too. I love historical movies anyway, especially Western. So I'm a bit biased on that front. I also think Tom Hanks is a great actor. I've always loved him in any film I've seen him in. Again, a bit biased on that front, but this role particularly, I think he did amazing in. As you say, he really does connect to the emotional aspect of it, and he does come across as someone with experience, as Richard does point out. And you do take him as this character that he's presented as, with no questions asked. So I think that's brilliant. Helena Zengel as well, absolutely wonderful. I mean, I ended up Googling her. I watched a few interviews with her, and she's wonderful. She's like, she's got so much experience, and she's 12 years old, if I'm not mistaken. She's so young and she's so experienced at what she does. I think it's fantastic. So my only criticism with this film was towards the end, I was worried there wasn't going to be a resolution. So without giving too much away, he returns home, finds things aren't as he expected. And that to me, I thought, oh no, you know, I've watched a brilliant film and the ending isn't going to be as I'd hoped. But luckily there is a resolution. It is, you know, it's a good conclusion, a good uplifting ending, in my opinion. So I was pleased with that. But as Richard did point out, there was a few plot things, such as coming across her home, that I thought, you know, really? I didn't expect that to realistically happen. Yeah, exactly. So although that part was, you know, really heart-rending and emotional, I do think there was a slight slip of the realistic aspect there. But the film in general was lovely. As Alex, I agree, I did shed a tear at this one as well. So yeah, emotional, beautiful. I enjoy the film as a Western. Yeah, wonderful. I loved it.
And indeed,
and I must also mention, of course, I was about to discuss Paul Greengrass, the director. That's one.
Porn Identity. Absolutely. Hats off to Paul Greengrass and James Newton Howard for a superlative music score. The only minor point I'd say within the music is I had the musical meme of the Monkees singing, "What am I doing hanging around? I should be on my way and bound to San Antonio," as he was heading down to San Antonio. It was a line that sort of crossed away from that. Michael Nesmith singing that whole sequence, but we'll listen to James Newton Howard. And actually, the only sort of area in terms of the cinematography, I thought it was a little bit too coppery and sepia toned in the early stages. Other than that, fine. Solid 9 out of 10 for myself. Absolutely wonderful. But Robin, are you going to destroy that completely on the basis of your viewing of this particular thing?
One of the things that I've wanted to see for a very long time is Tom Hanks in a Western. So at the close of last week's show, when Richard mentioned this, I mean, my ears pricked up instantly. When I read the plot line, I thought, okay, he's got this sort of girl who's, you know, been raised by the Native Americans who...
It's not like Kevin Costner in Dancers with Wolves, is it? Let's face
no,
it.
No, I was thinking more The Searchers with John Wayne. And I was thinking, oh, I don't know, okay. But I do love a good Western. So I tuned into this and, well, it is a good Western. I found Tom Hanks, he's cementing his reputation, as far as I'm concerned, as perhaps one of our greatest living actors in Hollywood at the moment, because he can tackle anything. He's gone a long way from those madcap comedies like Bachelor Pad in the 80s. You know, he's just absolutely amazing in just about anything he does. And this is no exception. I was intrigued by the whole concept of somebody traveling from town to town reading the news. But again, thinking about it, I don't know whether that was actually a thing or not. But it does kind of make sense. I mean, they had traveling medicine shows. Why not a traveling newsreader? When they
it was
met
the only way in a literary society which wasn't particularly literate that people could actually get absolutely. The news around from that point of view. Certainly happened in Britain.
Absolutely, of course it did. And, you know, the fact that the news might be old by the time it reaches certain states, well, has the 24-hour news cycle done us any good? No. I could do with news once a month, thank you. So, the vistas, I mean, I don't know whether they were helicopter or more likely drone shots. I just thought, this is absolutely fabulous. And it got me thinking, what would John Ford have done with this level of technology? Can you imagine the sweeping shots of Monument Valley that we'd have gotten? All in all, I would give this a firm 9. So this is the week where I rate a Western far higher than a sci-fi epic, and deservedly so, I think.
And we seem to be in agreement, which is astounding. I mean, if only we could actually have such unanimity amongst Harry and Meghan and their in-laws, then maybe we'd have a whole different zone. Before, Richard, you actually wax lyrical on the current state of play of our best buds, etc., and as they prepare for their Oprah interview, which has already been classified as it could be a disaster. Rebecca, any thoughts from your own point of view about what we could be seeing as the dying embers of the House of Windsor and so on? I mean, what are your thoughts?
I feel like I'm not well equipped to give an opinion because if I'm completely honest, as Robin said, I've been avoiding the news recently, if I'm honest. You know, I get the odd notification pop up on my phone and I'm like, oh gosh, not again. So I scroll up on my phone because I can't bear to look at it thinking it's going to be something, you know, really morbid and ruin my day. But no, I haven't really been keeping up with it. So if Richard could enlighten me
Let's hope, Rebecca,
recent events, that'd be great.
Let's hope, Rebecca, our colleagues at the University of Lincoln aren't listening to you actually saying, I'm a journalism student, yeah. I don't watch the news.
I read articles. I just, the notifications drive me crazy. It's always something depressing. So I'll read a nice article, but no, the rest,
and that's probably exactly what Her Majesty's actually thought. You know, she sees another thing that Meghan's actually said, anyway, Richard, over to you. I mean, I gave you the headlines today in terms of the way that the tabloids and the broadsheets have been handling this. It's fair to say that Meghan and Harry, they could do their own service. I mean, I'm sure they could do their own service if they wish. And are you feeling sorry for them? Do you think, what a pity, bring them back on board? As I said, my suggestion, why can't they just get together with Donald Trump and possibly Prince Andrew and live in Florida happily?
Just a loudmouth Yankee, I went down to Mexico. I didn't have much time to spend, about a week or so. There I lightly took advantage of a girl who loved me so. But I found myself thinking when the time had come to go. What am I doing hanging around? I should be on that train and gone. I should be riding on that train to San Antonio. What am I doing hanging around? She took me to the garden just for a little walk. I didn't know much Spanish and there was no time for talk. Then she told me that she loved me not with words but with a kiss. And like a fool I kept on thinking of a train I could not miss. What am I doing hanging around? I should be on that train and gone. I should be riding on that train to San Antonio. What am I doing hanging around? Well, it's been a year or so, and I wanna go back again. And if I get the money, well, I'll ride the same old train. But I guess your chances come but once, and boy, I sure missed mine. And still I can't stop thinking when I hear some whistle crying. What am I doing hanging round? I should be on that train and gone. I should be riding on that train to San Antonio. What am I doing hanging round? What am I doing hanging round? I should be on that train and gone. I should be riding on that train to San Antonio.
Well, I'm sure they will appreciate that, Alice. Really, I am. I mean, it's been a most extraordinary week for Royal Watchers because it's just to go back a little while. Meghan, as we know, had this what could have been a really destructive court case. You know, she announced it at the end of their trip to South Africa in 2019. So it's she's fought it for some time. And this was over the Mail on Sunday's publication of extracts from a private letter she wrote to her estranged father, Thomas. And had this gone to court and had the two of them either virtually or in person being opposite each other, this would have been an extraordinary course célèbre, and it was a very, very risky undertaking. What happened was a summary judgment, which meant that Meghan didn't have to actually appear in court. The judge said it was such a clear-cut case. If you write a letter, it is has a right, you have a right, the copyright issue is yet to be decided, but confidentiality is absolute. It's interesting that this links with an 1849 judgment of Queen Victoria's husband, Prince Albert, against Strange, who was a publisher, wanted to publish some of his etchings. And so this was the first victory, and then subsequently, we learned Meghan was pregnant, and we could rejoice over that, particularly since she'd talked, and I thought very movingly, well, in fact, in an article for the New York Times about her miscarriage last July, and this came out in November, and this was an attempt to break down a taboo, which I think was admirable because it is something that isn't much discussed. And so we could be happy for them then. The third thing that followed was there was the leak that they were on Oprah. She's a neighbor, she's a friend. This would be supposedly an intimate interview. This would be an interview which would deal with a whole variety of topics, philanthropy and motherhood, the future, and the royals. Now that is something that, frankly, it's potentially dangerous because royal interviews, I mean, we think of Prince Charles admitting adultery to David Dimbleby in the 1990s.
Prince Andrew recently.
That was unspeakable. And of course, Diana and Panorama, it's very, very interesting to debate what she meant and how that was obtained is something that's being investigated at the moment. But what Harry and Meghan actually say on Oprah will be said to a vast audience, and whether true or not, the palace will have no way of countering it. So they have a huge global brand, and what actually surprisingly happened, we knew that the Sandringham agreement with the Queen was due for reassessment in a year's time by the end of March. And so it took us by surprise yesterday. Frankly, there was no real change because it had been made clear, or should have been made clear, although there were endless rumours about this, that insofar as the Queen was concerned, you're either in or out as a working
It's like woman. A football team, let's face it. If you can't cut the mustard, you don't get on the bench. End of.
Well, the pity is, of course, that Harry, he won't be able to wear uniform as a veteran of two tours in Afghanistan. He loses his three military links, most particularly Captain General of the Royal Marines, which he inherited from the Duke of Edinburgh. And I think there's no doubt that they are very, very unhappy. But the extraordinary thing about yesterday wasn't just what was decided, because I think most of us, firstly, there was no way they were going to go return as working royals. I mean, that wasn't going to happen. It's so obvious that it wasn't. But secondly, there had been the rumours, or the rumour that indicated a hope that they might be able to keep some of their patronages. Several were involved. Meghan had the Royal National Theatre and also the Association of Commonwealth Universities, and then there was a Commonwealth one, the Queen's Commonwealth Trust. But it wasn't really practical. But what was quite extraordinary was the statements, not just Buckingham Palace's, but the Sussex's reply, because this indicated a completely different attitude. The whole concept of service, so far as the Queen was concerned, being a working royal was a full-time duty. So far as the Sussexes are concerned, service, they say, is universal, and there's little doubt they made no
attempt. Richard, it's quite simple. We will just have to pause and wait a couple of years until we find out from Peter Morgan in the next series of The Crown exactly what's actually happening, because I think that'll tell us all about how wonderful Meghan and Harry actually are. Robin, do we care, or is it a case of, well, if they're pushed, we could probably invite Harry and Meghan onto an episode of Resonance Rewind?
I don't think we've got room for them on Resonance
no.
Rewind. They don't
exactly.
strike me as sci-fi fans.
Yeah.
I don't think that they've been pushed. This, to my, well, admittedly, rather ignorant ears, they chose this. And what I really don't understand is I was fully behind them with wanting privacy, the Mail on Sunday case. Okay, yep, get that. But then to go on Oprah. And of course, the risk I can see to the royal family is, as you alluded to, Richard, it's being done in America. It's not being done by the royal-friendly BBC. You know, anything could happen. Anything could happen.
Robin, when you say royal-friendly BBC, I think Martin Bashir and Emily Maitlis might possibly have had one or two sort of members in the royal family who said, I don't think you were that friendly to us, but, you know, by the by. Rebecca, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree slightly with Richard, with Robin there, sorry. I do think certain parts are a choice, and I think that was a bit risky in that aspect, but, you know, I've never been in their position. I never will be, so it's hard to give
You
give
don't
my
know.
Meghan didn't like that.
She's going to be in that position, and she got a role in an acting job and then actually met up with Harry when he was doing various Nazi impersonations over in,
there we go.
in Texas, you know? Who knows?
There we go. Yeah, so I've never been in that position. I don't think I personally would have chosen to take it, you know, onto TV and things like that, though. But that's just my personal opinion.
I mean, Kate Middleton, if she'd chosen to go to a different university, might never have encountered William. It's a different line entirely. Who knows what could actually happen? They might end up on Mars. Richard, it's going to be interesting times. We will wrap up in a few moments with a more expanded version of the music of James Newton Howard.
I have watched one other film.
Oh, wow. Oh, do you know, Well, no, it was just so much to pack in with the Royals as well. We didn't. What was the other movie, Richard? Let's tease it out.
It's called, I can review this very, very quickly. It's called School's Out Forever, and quite frankly, it's about...
It's about lockdown.
Well, yes, a terrifying virus. This is, there's so many horror films currently being released. I just thought that I ought to try one, and it's a sort of horror drama set in a public school. Whoever has made this movie, Oliver Milburn is the one responsible, his director, has seen Lindsay Anderson's If several times, I would suggest, hasn't, I'm afraid, benefited from that experience. You have a virus that spreads so fast that when, for example, a rabid dog attacks, the dog can freeze or, as it were, about to grab someone because the virus will literally paralyze instantly. And the virus is only something to catch our attention because, in fact, what has occurred is 15-year-old Lee Keegan, played by Oscar Kennedy, he's expelled from St. Mark's School for Boys, which is a private school. It's killed his father. He decides to return to the school. There are still some pupils who've survived. And here's the thing. The school is surrounded by the local parish militia, led by Georgina, played by Samantha Bond, and they plan an attack to rescue her daughter. Her daughter is a murderous vigilante who's become the prisoner of the schoolboys. Now, frankly, a virus that spreads this fast, my only regret was it didn't spread faster and faster so that the screenwriter's hands were affected, and if they'd been unable to complete this unfortunate script, I think we would all have benefited, because quite honestly, the cast here includes Anthony Head and Steve Oram and Samantha Bond. Oscar Kennedy's good looking, he can't act. His best friend, Mac, played by Liam Lau Fernandez, helps to organize the school's defense. There, as for the romance, well, I mean, the object of his affection is a very young matron, played by Jasmine Blackborough. I mention all these names, they may mean absolutely nothing, because this is the movie that's supposed, you see, it's the local parish council militia, and that shows that we're all savages and animals underneath, and when we have crises, look what happens. Well, look what happens when you have a really bad script and when you have a movie that doesn't grip you. It's a total waste of time. The opportunity, if it had been dramatic, fair enough, that would have been interesting. Whether if it had been serious and you'd have had an examination of society besieged by a hidden form of virus and a serious attempt to tackle this, it could have been very intriguing. And if you'd had a conventional horror movie, that too, even if it had scared me to bits, would have been useful. But this is a complete mishmash of all sorts of ideas, and the only thing I can say is avoid.
Okay, Richard, now you've raised 3 points there that I just need to allude to. Number one, Samantha Bond, who is a good friend of mine from back in the day, although I haven't spoken to her for a couple of years in the whole process, so she's in there, so I have to have some support there. It's also horror, so it kind of connects with Robin's sort of genre as well from that point of view. And of course, you've done your usual thing with respect to the whole system when you don't particularly like something, not beating around the bush, saying what you really think, which is great. Tell us the title again so that Robin and Rebecca and myself can check this out for next week, because we didn't have this. What is the title of this little number?
The title, which I did send you, is School's Out Forever. Indeed, it is scripted like this. The whole concept, a complete mishmash. As I say, I mean, you can get, if you make a movie that's bad enough, you can get a cult following occasionally, and this is a shot at that.
Okay, School's Out Forever. The other connection, of course, is School's Out, one of Alice Cooper's greatest sort of numbers. So Robin, I'm sure, would give you extra bonus 2 points just for that. School's Out Actually, Forever, available on Netflix, you know what? Did you say?
I don't think I'll even bother watching that, because there's no way that the film can ever be as downright entertaining as Richard's review of it.
Well, we'll put it out there.
And you have to say, I mean, sometimes you've got to call rubbish out. Good Lord, even the music in this movie. You see, this is set in contemporary England in a private school, which I mentioned, a public school, so to speak. And therefore, you have to have Zadok the priest, which is played at a coronation, which is the first tune. And then the first load of vigilantes, they're singing Jerusalem in the street. How about
William Blake would have been proud, I'm sure, tying in with Jason Whittaker.
If Blake was alive, he'd have turned in his grave.
That's a contradiction in terms, really, but never mind. Blake is not a zombie, you know. If he was alive, he would have turned in his grave. Let's just hold fire on that one. Richard Fitzwilliams, it's been awesome as ever. Rebecca Bond, likewise. Richard, any tease ahead to next week?
Yes, indeed. We will be looking at Judas and the Black Messiah with Lakeith Stanfield and Daniel Kaluuya.
There we are. And Robin Pierce, we salute you as ever. Take care. Keep on keeping on. And we will move on to other things. Happy trails, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks very much. Bye, Rob. Bye.